You've got Simon Nash, Paul Crowe, and we're on 96.5 Inner FM. We're going to now go and have a chat with, not Andrew Thomas because he's next, but we're going to have a chat with Cameron McKenzie from Four Pillars Gin. Good morning, mate.
Fellas, good morning. I think I've achieved greatness if I've bumped Tomo.
Well, I think he probably will be blissfully unaware, unless he's listening on the TuneIn radio app, which we've just promoted. Last year, I think we spoke to you as well around this time, because we are soon to see the famous Christmas gin from Four Pillars.
We are, yes. No, we've actually launched it. Okay. It is out and about, and it's a little hard to control this product, I must admit. It seems to just go crazy this time of year. It seems to have struck a chord with a lot of people. And interesting, it seems to really strike a chord with wine drinkers and fans of wine, because it does have that sort of Christmas tree muskety character to it. So it's going really well. There's a lot of it left, but it's always a fun time of year.
Did you say not a lot left, or there is a lot left?
No, there's not a lot left. I mean, it's an unusual one in that the rules I have to make this particular gin is we actually distill the 1968 Women's Weekly Christmas Pudding recipe, which is the recipe my late mother used to use making all our Christmas pudding. And it kind of stands to reason, because all of those ingredients, you know, currants, raisins, mixed peel, nutmeg, cinnamon, they all actually work really well with juniper, which is quite Christmas tree-like. But one of the reasons this is a limited product is once we've made that gin, we have to age it in oak. And the oak we use is all over 100 years old. So all the barrels are north of 100 years old, and they've all held Rutherglen Musket for at least 80 years. Wow. Before we've got our hands on them. And that's the difficulty, is my good friends up in Rutherglen don't like giving up those barrels.
I was going to ask, good morning, Cameron, how on earth did you get your hands on them?
Look, luck and bribery.
Oh, so that's bribery, yes. Best form of negotiation.
Yeah, pretty much. And they're amazing old barrels. You know, I kind of look at them and think they're almost national trust. You know, there's a couple of barrels there that are Grant's whiskey barrels that must be about 120, 130 years old. And I'd say they would have come to Australia, you know, 100-odd years ago, full of whiskey. Once the whiskey had been dispatched with, they sent the barrels up, and the Rutherglen guys filled them with their fortifieds. There's old Remy Martin cognac barrels in there. There's old Spanish sherry barrels. All odd sizes, all very strange. But because they're held liquid through that time, they don't leak, they don't fall apart very easily, and they're kind of ideal for us. So that's the problem for this product. It's always a little bit limited, because I've only got about 16 of those barrels, and we've sort of set it up as a bit of a Solera, so we never empty them. We just keep topping them up each year with fresh gin.
And who makes the puddings? Because there must be a few of those that go through.
Look, when I was a kid growing up, every Derby Day, so the Saturday before Melbourne Cup, my mum would drag my four idiot brothers and me into the kitchen to make pudding. And at the time, it felt like eternity, but it was probably only about 20 minutes. And I thought, what kind of parent would I be if I didn't torture my children in the same way? So on Derby Day every year, my kids, with Stu Gregor's kids and Matt Jones' kids, get together. And spend the morning in my house making puddings, and then we sort of distill them throughout the following week. So it's sort of a new tradition, and it's loads of fun, and I think the kids are far more into it than I was as a kid, because they all watch MasterChef and a bit more aware of food these days. So it's a tremendous time of year, actually. Really, you know, that whole cup weekend is our indication to get your head into Christmas. It's time to start thinking about Christmas. Mm. So
the year disappears, doesn't it, really quickly from that point.
I think. Well, that's it. We do release this gin to our mailing list just before Derby Day, and I did laugh the other day, because I thought, gosh, I can't go any earlier than that, or I'm going to be like the supermarket putting hot cross buns on the shelf in December.
Yes. Well, you certainly sound like you're not having any trouble moving it. But so that, I reckon that's a really fun thing, and, you know, someone was telling me that they had it and they put it in the freezer and it was just stunning.
Like,
that is really that was actually their preference, was to have it super cold.
There's a few ways to drink it. You know, I drink it on Christmas Day with a huge, you know, nice big thing of ice and a nice glug of gin. And throughout the day, I'll occasionally just put half a teaspoon of cream or custard into it and just sip it. And it's like drinking a much stronger but lighter Christmas pudding. Or some ginger ale. If you want to make a more longer sort of cold gin and tonic style drink, ginger ale or ginger beer is really lovely with it. And it brings out a lot of the flavours.
That's a good tip, I reckon.
I'm going to have to get out to Healesville.
You need to be out here today. It's such a spectacular day in Healesville.
Oh, Canberra, a brilliant day out there, yeah.
Well, it's beautiful in Melbourne too, and we've just been to, well, in the show, we've just been to McLaren Vale and then also to Clare, and they're having stunning days as well. So Southern Australia's putting it on.
The gods are smiling on us, I think.
Exactly. So so speaking about getting out to Healesville and coming to Four Pillars Gin, it's, you know, you drive into Healesville and it is absolutely a landmark now, that big Four Pillars sign on the building. And of course, that used to be the timber yard, didn't it, that side?
That's right. That's right, yeah. It's changed a bit now.
You can do that.
Healesville is just unreal now. You know, you can go there and have a whole weekend or a couple of days without even going to wineries. Like, you know, you've got that as well. But
you've got the whole experience out there now.
Yeah, the town's just a lovely walking little village, really. Mm. They've worked pretty hard to maintain a village feel about Healesville. And, you know, right across the road from us is Peyton and Jones Winery, which is a couple of young guys, both of whom have worked at the distillery, I might add. But they've been around Healesville for their whole lives and making wines for the last 15 years. They've set up their winery in Salador across the road. Watts River Brewery is a couple of hundred metres away from us.
Yep.
And then you wander up the other end of town and there's giant steps and innocent bystander, the Healesville pub in the middle. You've kind of got a weekend and you can dump the car and just walk.
Okay.
It's a really lovely little town.
And then the Alchemy guys are doing whiskey.
Of course, and they're doing a whole range of spirits up there, you know, at a more cottage level, but they're making really good gins and interesting vodka, whiskey, all sorts of things. And it's a really cool little bar in the main street as well.
Sorry,
no, I was going to say, because the gin market now, hasn't it, Cam? It's exploded all of a sudden, hasn't it? Oh, I wouldn't say all of a sudden, but it's...
In distilling, I don't like to use the word exploded or explosion.
No, good point, actually. Yeah.
We're trying to avoid that at all costs.
Thanks for picking
up. Look, it is quite amazing to see, I think, these more contemporary styles are leading the way a little bit. You know, I love London Dry Gin, but we don't make London Dry Gin. We make more contemporary styles with junipers, a canvas, and we've got these really amazing botanicals that can sit over the top. And I think Australia has a really interesting story in gin because we are part of Asia, so we get incredible spices through Southeast Asia right through to the Middle East, plus all these amazing native botanicals that are now becoming more available. You know, Stu and I travel a fair bit through North America. We're trying to sort of crack that market. I'm constantly saying to everyone over there, not everything in Australia is going to sting you, bite you, or eat you. You know, we've got amazing things, and gin can have that sense of place. Mm. So we are seeing, I think we're taking a bit of ground off vodka, and I think the small bar scene is just going so well that it's opening up cocktails and opening up mixed drinks for people to really enjoy, and with that comes gin.
Mm. Well, the new millennium kids, that generation, they look for quality.
So drink less but more, but better.
Better,
is that?
Yeah.
That's it. You know, well, that's pretty much what's written on every one of our bottles. We are drinking less in Australia than we were, three or four decades ago, which is a great sign. But I think people are more interested in what they're drinking rather than the volume they're drinking. They want to see quality, interesting, premium
quality
product.
Not quantity. Yeah.
That's it. And I think, you know, one of the things we're most proud of with the distillery, when people it does get pretty busy on weekends.
Yeah.
But people can just see straight through to the distillery. It's a bit of a fishbowl for us, but it's very transparent. They see the botanicals we're using. They see how slow the stills work, and the flow rate out of the stills is, you know, about a litre and a half a minute. We're not making Jim Beam here. It's a really fun thing for us to walk people through the process.
It's funny you say that, because a team member of my wife's was out there last weekend doing your...
gin experience. They were taking on it, and they absolutely talked about all the botanicals and everything, and they were amazed. And look, they're my generation, so you know they're gin. We'll leave that alone, whatever.
if.
Yeah, and she was, but as she said, she couldn't believe when you walked through it, just drinking neat gin, how beautiful it was. And she found it amazing.
I was blown away the same. We were wine tasting and we got there and the guy said, okay, you've been wine tasting, so that's all about putting air into the experience. We're going to do exactly the opposite and I want you to hold it in your mouth and, you know, for 15 seconds until I tell you. Like, amazing.
Yeah, it's
true. It's a very different way to taste spirits. And alcohol should warm your chest, not burn your throat. So we taste gin off those stills when we're distilling every 15 minutes at about 93%. So for us to have a technique that allows us to taste it without burning our mouth or our throat actually works well. And taking people through that, it's great to see the look on their face when they get it right. And they go, wow, I can taste straight spirits. And then all of a sudden, you know, I taste all whiskey, rum, cognac. I taste it exactly the same way because I just find it a more pleasant experience.
Yeah, is that how you sort of got around, like, that Shiraz gin of yours? Which, how you can't keep up with that either, can you?
No, that's a great example. That and Christmas gin are two experiments that work. I think I said the Westy ones, so they don't all work. The less said about the asparagus gin, the better. But sometimes you've got to jump the shark. And everyone kept asking us about making a slow gin. And I thought, well, you know what, we don't grow slow berries, and I hate adding sugar to things. And I don't like most slow gins because they pick up a bit of a marzipan character, and I just don't like marzipan. So Shiraz was one that we said, well, let's look at a flavoured gin. Shiraz grapes, you know, my background is wine as well, so they're much sweeter than slow, so we don't have to add sugar, we don't have to add colour. I wanted to make a stronger gin than a slow gin, so ours is 37%, most slows are about 26%. And it was just one of those experiments that struck a chord with people, and it's gone gangbusters, really. It's been amazing.
That's fantastic.
I remember getting a bottle of one that you made with Neil Perry.
Oh, yes.
So it was a red label one. Was that a limited edition one? Or
We keep making from time to time. So we keep Rockpool and Spicefemple in stocks with it. And we have it at the distillery from time to time. But, you know, his brief was Spicefemple, you know. And it took a while to get it right. But we used red Szechuan, green Szechuan, macadamia nut, Kwandong, apples. Really sort of out there stuff. At times we had to go out a bit and then come back in and say, okay, we're probably going a bit too far. But some of those Szechuans are just the most incredible spices to distill, and they don't numb your mouth quite the way Szechuan food does, but there's this aromatic and texture about them that's just unmistakable and amazing fun.
Yeah, it was a beautiful gin. I think what you're doing, especially with, you know, anyone who's coming and having that the gin experience, as Crowe said. I never drank gin, you know, but now I've got, I reckon, 5 bottles that I have, and I have them neat now. And so you're opening up a market of people who just have never been shown how to do it.
These modern gins, you know, a lot of people come into the distillery and they say, oh, you know, there's a big group, and there'll be one or two people who say, oh, do you know, I'll just have a beer because I don't, or a glass of wine, I don't drink gin. And that's fine, you know, we've got no dramas with that. But once you give them a little bit of a nudge and you have a bit of a chat, you find out that they either don't like the gin that their parents or grandparents drank, which is that classic London dry style, or they don't like tonic water.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the bigger point.
It is, and we use Fever-Tree Mediterranean a lot.
That's exactly what I was about to suggest, yeah.
It's right in the middle. It's closer to, it's sort of a cross between tonic and soda, and I'll say to people a lot of people buy Schweppes too, and I find Schweppes probably a little bit sweet, but if I can only buy Schweppes, I'll buy Schweppes soda as well and just maybe go half-half on that, and it's a serviceable, solid tonic. But where possible, we show people a tonic that isn't quite what they thought it was, and before you know it, they're GNC drinking.
Yeah, and I think we're understanding that the botanicals really do change. A gin you know, style, and therefore you find one that you like, and or you find a few that you like, and you use them at different times. And but importantly, like your core range, it's more in that orange flavor profile. So therefore, you mix it with, and, you know, you garnish it with orange, and it's all, you know, you can't mix it up.
Because a lot of people, going back to what Cam was saying, a lot of people in the old days, well, they drink a gin and tonic with mum and dad,
just,
and it was
a slice of lemon in it, and that was just
London dry gin, and it was as boring as billy o.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we ever intended to have a signature garnish. We just found it was so much better with orange, and we use a lot of orange in the distillation. But about 4 months after we launched, a bartender in Sydney said to me, he said, "Gee, I'm really pleased you recommend orange with your gin." And I said, "Oh, do you like it? Like, I'm really pleased." He said, "Oh, yeah, no, I love it. But limes are $3.80 each at the moment." It never occurred to me.
Yeah, that's fantastic. But it is, it's really, you know, you've got to, and then I noticed someone at a bar was having Hendrix, and they put cucumber in that.
And that's their signature garnish, has been cucumber.
Yeah, so it's good that people are starting to understand that, and obviously the bartenders do, but the general drinking public who've got a bottle of gin at home, and they're now thinking about the whole process and the completing that experience, I guess.
Yeah, and look around your garden too, because it depends on the gin, but things like our Navy Strength gin, I'll always put a little shading of ginger in it, and maybe a kaffir lime leaf, and if I can't get that, a young waxy lemon leaf, you just tear it in half and put it in a drink. It's a really beautiful garnish. Rosemary is beautiful in some gin. Basil, wine. There's all sorts of little things that you can put in that can change the face of a gin and tonic. Mm. It's amazing what people have got a rosemary bush in their garden somewhere. And if you get one of the more... We did a gin in Spain called Casandira, where we used olive leaf, rosemary, bay leaf, as well as a whole lot of native botanicals. And that, with a little stick of rosemary, was just such a beautiful gin and tonic, and not what you would expect at all.
And so... The tonic you're using then is fairly neutral. Is that the idea?
Well, it's just not as sweet. You know, I think Mediterranean tonic is just as bitter as their Indian tonic. It's just not quite as sweet. I think they've pulled it back a little bit. There's a few good dry tonics. You know, Cappy Dry is a really good tonic as well. Mm. Interestingly, the mixer we use with Bloody Shiraz, I don't use tonic as such with it. We use bitter lemon. Fever Tree changed the name of their bitter lemon to lemon tonic. But there's also a spectacular Aussie one called Strange Love. Mm-hmm. Strange Love Bitter Lemon. And it's that with Bloody Shiraz gin in a gin and tonic style drink. It's just a really delicious Sunday afternoon, 26 degrees in Healesville drink.
That is not what saved the field.
I wouldn't have said that either. That is awesome.
That is brilliant.
Yeah, really lovely, tall, cold drink. Over ice, just delicious. And we show people, the colour comes out, the flavours come out. It's really, really,
really
lovely.
Awesome. It's, mate, well done for everything you're doing, and it's obviously going from strength to strength. I love the story that you're actually now selling gin to the Londoners.
Yeah, it's nice to the Eskimos there, but that's a good market for us, not a big market. We've got export markets now, nothing massive, but growing all the time. And you go to the UK, that's where you really get a perspective on the gin market. You know, you walk into a nondescript pub in Manchester, and they'll have 30 gins on the shelf. And it's just the norm now in any venue or pub in the UK. You don't just have two or three gins. You have a gin selection, you have a gin menu. So an Australian gin doesn't look out of place if people are going to start taking their gin list seriously. You look right at home.
Yeah, that's, and again, well, it's like what a lot of the bartenders and have done out here. When you go to, you know, like if you're in a whiskey bar or a gin bar, and they give you a whole, it's like a wine list, and they give you the list, and they can walk you through it. And it's an experience that you, for us, generation that, you know, were brought up on Buddy Gordon's. It's such a it's such a great opportunity to experience.
Yeah, well, I think when we, you know, I've always said when we make gin and when we're tasting gin, we look for the same things we used to look for in wine. We look for balance, weight, aroma, flavour, texture. The big difference is, for the most part, we're making an ingredient rather than a finished product. So it's got to look good on its own, but it's got to look better in a drink. And we just find, because it can have a sense of place and it can have all of these different botanicals, a lot of people who are going out for dinner and are going to have a bottle of wine with dinner might start with a gin and tonic, and they'll have, you know, it in their head, do I want something that's citrusy? Do I want something that's savoury, something that's spicy, something that's floral? And suddenly there's a range of those things on a list somewhere for them to choose from.
It's a beautiful aperitif, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, terrific fun.
Fantastic. Cam, we better let you get back to the Shiraz gin with bitter lemon and the 26 degree day in Hillsville.
I may have let it loose what I'm going to be doing this afternoon. Thanks for having me on. A Merry Christmas to everyone.
And to you too. And it's a great marketing you've done on your bottle for the Christmas this year.
It's beautiful. Yeah, I forgot to say, we change the label every year.
Yeah.
This year, who's just a fantastic Melbourne artist, he's just been commissioned with a whole lot of trams. And it's sort of a poolside Melbourne Christmas scene on the label, and we love it. We've had great feedback on it.
Well done.
It looks really good.
Brilliant.
Excellent. Well, everyone get out to Hillsville, go and see the guys, have the gin experience. If you've had it once, go and do it again.
Go and do it again, yeah.
Because there are certainly always some new gins to have a look at. Cam, thanks, mate. Merry Christmas to you,
Cam,
as well.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks, fellas. Merry Christmas.
And keep doing what you're doing.
thanks very much.
See you, mate. Thank you.